Hello, this is Melissa. It is Thursday the 9th, Real History, and today I am joined by Neil Foster. And I thought before I brought him on to start talking, he had sent me a poem that he wrote sometime back. I forgot to notice when he wrote it, but maybe even as long ago as a decade ago. And it is entitled, Don't Shoot the Messenger. And I thought that I would read it for us before we get started. Don't shoot the messenger. A new world order from the chaos of an old, a place in society of which we'll be told there's no room for freedom, family, or hope, just trying each day to live and to cope. The powers that be will be living like kings as our masters pull strings and use us as things to service their needs, their wants, and their thrills, whilst they kill us all off with intoxicating pills. They're spraying the skies with a toxic mist and preparing us all for the iron fist that'll smash and grab and steal our lives, destroying the family, husbands and wives. Excuse me, sir, while I lick your boots and those with whom you're in cahoots. I voted for you a long time ago before I saw through your electoral show. You promised me things you never produced, but it took me a long time before I deduced you're a liar, a cheat, a whore, and a thief. I'm ashamed of the fact that I had such belief in a system corrupt from the top tier down, where a star sits on top in a frivolous gown. Celebrity worship is the drug of the sheeple who grovel in awe at prostitute people. They pay their way to see the stars and admire their egos, trinkets, and cars, spending their cash on worthless trash. They emulate idols as dumb and as brash. The day will come not too far off when the animal's farm holds an empty trough for the masses to starve whilst their masters smirk at the useless eaters still fit for their work. You'll shine their shoes and polish their gold. You can't go on saying you haven't been told. Be warned that it's over if the messenger's shot, because life under tyranny is not worth a lot. Will you grovel to elites as you starve in the streets? Or will you go down fighting as armies and fleets? Will you conquer your fear for those you hold dear? Or submit as a coward in sniveling fear? The choice is yours to do as you will, whilst time is short. We have some still to battle against the chains in the making, while media whores make news they are faking. Life is for living and too short to waste in servitude to a cabal, debased psychopaths, each all in it for power, as cometh the slave in humble cower. Hold your heads high and see through the lies. Turn off your TV. View the world with new eyes. Slaves we may be, but a majority crowd. So fight for your freedom and fight for it proud. There you go, Neil. Good one.
Well, it was a long time ago. It was 2011.
Ah.
That was in the fourth edition of the Sovereign Independent newspaper. Yeah, long time ago.
Well, it's good and it is still timely. And one of the things that made me think about your poem again is that as I was scrolling through the different news stories that you've sent me in the last month, which as usual, there's just a stack of them and they're all good.
Too many.
Well, you had sent me a little picture and a video, about 30 seconds of a video, of the UK's Eurovision Song Contest, so the UK's entry, and it was a non-binary singer named Ollie Alexander, and he appeared in a new promotional video for the upcoming singing competition whilst wearing a woman's bra. And so I actually spent, because we rescheduled our conversation, it was going to be in a couple of days, but we're doing it now, and I actually spent the last hour looking at the Eurovision contestants and listening to a lot of the music. And the thing that I was struck by, because most of the entrants are accomplished performers and songwriters, and the thing that struck me was the high level of musicality and talent in this competition, and the way that music is always used to debase culture. So you've got somebody named Nemo, whose pronouns are they, them, there, and writes about, you know, mental illness and gender identity. And I have to tell you that his song about basically, you know, coming out as a non-binary individual, it's a catchy little tune.
Welcome to the show, let everybody know I'm done playing the game, I'll break out of the chains. You better buckle up, I'll pour another cup. This is my poem, so drink it up, my friend. I went to hell and back to find myself on track. I broke the code, whoa-oh-oh, like Gemini's. I just gave it some time. Let me tell you a tale about life, but the good and the bad, better hold on tight. Who decides what's wrong, what's right? Everything is balanced, everything's light. I got so much on my mind, and I've been awake all night.
Somewhere between the O's and the ones, that's where I found my kingdom come. My heart beats like a... Somewhere between the O's and the ones, that's where I found my kingdom come. My heart beats like a drum.
But at the same time, it admits that he's mentally ill.
What you have is exactly what you wrote about in your poem, which is people prostituting themselves to become stars in this system whose only objective is to destroy us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this particular song contest, the Eurovision, is notoriously famous for being a big hit amongst the homosexual community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise that you've got this kind of trash going on it. And I think it was a few years ago they had a thing in a dress with a beard that won it, pretending to be a woman.
Well, that's not surprising. Yeah, I was reading the little wiki on the contest, and they were saying, you know, it's been a contest since 1956, and it said that it's received criticism because it will use the platform for a bit of political infighting, you know, country to country, mm-hmm. to air their differences or their squabbles, but that it's also come under fire for being a platform promoting all things LGBTQ, and that really comes through.
Yeah, well, it's kind of always been like that.
Really?
In terms of, not so much LGBT, because that didn't exist back in the day, but as I say, it's always been fawned over by the gay community, shall we call them, mm-hmm. the homosexual community, particularly men, I'm talking about.
Right.
So, yeah, it's always been fawned on over them. But yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to find a gay guy in Britain who would watch this, you know. So it's a bit... I don't understand it myself, but it's a bunch of talentless idiots, basically. they wouldn't get a job singing in the pub. And if it turned up dressed like this guy, they'd probably be thrown out of the pub. So, yeah, it's garbage. The 30-second video is enough. You know, that's stomach-churning. I mean, who's going to sit through 3.5 minutes of that?
The thing of it is that I think a lot of people do. I mean, I'm looking at all of the different videos. Now, again, I know that things can be absolutely made up and statistics are there to make you think that something is popular. But most of the official music videos for this year's competition have received several million views each. And so we're not the audience for this competition. We're not the demographic. That's clear. That's obvious.
I don't know anybody that would watch it.
But a lot of young people would, you see.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's what's so tragic about this, is that it's not aimed at us. It's aimed at people who are between the ages of, say, 13 and 30.
Well, it's also, and based on the concepts they're pushing here, it's also going to appeal to the mentally ill children who are thinking, oh, look at that, I could be famous. I can get up there at the Eurovision and wear a brand. I'll get millions of views on YouTube.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what it is, yes.
So it's pandering to the mentally ill as well, even although the admission of one of the contestants says that they're mentally ill.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, that wasn't the only entrant. There were several who, I think it was Denmark's entrance was a woman, I don't recall her name, but she said that she was the first brown queer representative for Denmark, and she was a proud proponent of charities and awareness for LGBTQ and bipolar mental illness. I think that was the same one that had the bipolar mental illness. So, yeah, I mean, this is it. But the scary thing is that we know that those of us who continue to comment on this, we're the haters.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of criticism after it. Maybe some in the media, but, you know, there might be a few politicians pipe up about it, because it's an easy target to try and win some votes, you know, if for parents who are having to put up with this garbage that's being taught in the schools, for example.
Yes.
You know, if there's a big outcry in a certain area in London or Manchester or whatever in the UK, they can point at this going, oh, we can't be having this, you know. And no point at this guy wearing a bra.
That was one of the stories that you sent me, was about the children being, I'm seeing if I can pull this up here, Scottish primary schools appoint children as LGBT champions.
Yeah, they're trying to recruit children to get into little groups and convince each other that they're not really mentally ill. They just all want to be something they're not. And so they don't have the stigma. And you know, you wouldn't be surprised to see older children being brought into this from maybe, you know, a higher, what's the terminology in America? I don't know. The higher years of learning, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe being brought into a classroom saying, oh, you know, I was just like you when I was your age, and look at me now, I'm a woman with a beard.
So, I mean, this is very insidious. I'll read just a little bit of it. It says that Scottish primary schools, so this is top down, are appointing children as LGBT champions, and they're asking pupils as young as 4 if they are part of the LGBT community. This is documents that were seen by the Telegraph paper revealed that schools are setting up LGBT clubs and gender and sexual orientation alliance groups for pupils in order to meet the various ideological-driven requirements for membership in the group's nationwide scheme. Now, they're receiving huge funding, taxpayer funding, £450,000 from the SNP government, £340,000 from local authorities, and another £154,000 from NHS Scotland. That's what they received in the fiscal year 2022 to 2023. And the group boasts that in the last 3 years, it has trained more than 5,000 teachers and 200 Scottish secondaries, and over 40 primary schools have joined the charter scheme.
Yeah, and in the meantime, Scotland's falling apart.
Yes.
You know, and all this money is getting spent on this, I don't know what to call it anymore, it's just insanity. And people in Scotland go along with this, the ordinary people that vote anybody into power, that supposedly vote them into power, that has anything to do with this stuff, has nobody to blame but themselves.
Yes.
You know, I guess it's like the parents taking their female children to compete against a man. Mm-hmm. They're just asking for trouble, you know, or taking them to a pride parade. It's the same thing. Any parent that takes their child to a pride parade needs to be assessed for some kind of mental illness themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
But just on that topic, I sent you a little image, And it was a way of, like we mentioned before with the furries, you know, the way to get them out is to put a cat flap in the door and a litter tray outside and feed them cat food. Well, this one's kind of along the same lines, but it's, I'll just read it out. A daughter says she's trans in the ninth grade. I don't know what age is that in America. What age is that?
I'm not sure. Maybe 13, 14.
Okay. And the father turns around and says, I confess I'm trans too. And she's confused. And she says, Dad, no, you're not. And the dad says, stop being a bigot, Charlotte. Let's do this together. So he puts on a dress and puts on makeup the next morning. And the daughter is angry and tells me to stop faking. No, I'm trans, honey. Now get in the car and let's go to school. She's horrified, has to be dropped off a block away. Nope, walk her in, wave to the front desk. She's fuming, embarrassed. Wife can't stop laughing. Pick up daughter in skirt and heels, crappy makeup, glitter on the cheeks, skip over to her and her friends. And she counts out, Dad, stop, it's not funny. And then demand that she use my pronouns and call her a bigot. Next morning, she's done with the whole trans thing and begs me to stop. And it ends up as being trans now the 90s version of goth. Definitely not cool when your parents do it, so lean into it and shame them out of it. I bet that would work.
Oh, that's very funny.
That would work.
It might.
Yeah, you just have to get a father brave enough to do it, I suppose. Where next?
Oh, wherever you want to go.
Well, you did say you wanted to have some quotes from Solzhenitsyn and Bill Cooper.
You said you were reading books.
I'm reading them both at the same time. I read Bill Cooper when I'm minding chickens. And I read Solzhenitsyn before I go to bed. Just some nice light reading before bedtime, you know. I suppose that this is applicable to all the situations we're in now, the first quote here, and it's probably one of the more famous ones. And how we burned in the camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? Or if during periods of mass arrests, as for example in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and at every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers or whatever else was at hand. The organs, that's the police obviously, or the secret services or whatever, would very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt if we didn't love freedom enough. And even more, we had no awareness of the real situation. We purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterward. And isn't that the truth? People just let it go. And this applies to everything. It applies to the transgender stuff. If that had been stamped out right at the start, and the parents had just pulled all the children out of schools, who were not having this, that would have stopped.
Yes.
Because the government wants the children in schools, right? Because if all the children get pulled out of school and they start learning real stuff, I would suggest that the authorities would be in big, big trouble.
I think so. See, this is human nature, and that is a good quote there from, which is that Gulag Archipelago?
Yeah.
The human nature just seems to be to say to yourself, well, it won't get worse. I'm just going to put my head down and hope it doesn't get worse. But once the ball is rolling, it always gets worse. We haven't seen anything yet.
No. Another quote that goes along with that is a bit shorter, this one. I think that was from the first part one. I think this is also from part one. He starts off at the start of that book about the process of the arrest, or what leads up to it. It starts off here, at what point then should one resist? When one's belt is taken away, when one is ordered to face into a corner, when one crosses the threshold of one's home, an arrest consists of a series of incidental irrelevancies of a multitude of things that do not matter, and there seems no point in arguing about any one of them individually. And yet all these incidental irrelevancies taken together implacably constitute the arrest. So it's the same as the incremental pushing of the transgender thing or climate change or whatever it may be. It's step by step by step, and as long as you accept every little step, it's very hard to go backwards. And you get just, you're going to get just a line in the sand, and you say, well, am I going to cross that or am I not? And that's what it's going to come down to for all manner of things, all manner of topics. I mean, how much garbage are people going to listen to from the politicians? How much of their money is going to be sent over to bomb innocent people abroad? How much are they going to put up with before they do something? Not saying, I mean, you can have all the protests you want and waving your banners in the street. The government ain't going to listen to that. That's easy for them. That's no threat to them.
I mean, you're right, but you touched on it in the poem of yours that I read. And okay, so let's say the Eurovision Song Contest is not for everybody. Let's say that it's, you know, a niche audience that really buys into it and praises it. Well, the trouble is that people have been lapping up, gobbling up trash, rubbish entertainment for generations. And so if it's not that, there's something else, you know, Love Island or, you know, whatever, their Coronation Street. Alan used to be fond of making that example, the longest running soap opera in Britain. Mm-hmm. They can't pull themselves off of entertainment. And because of that, if, you know, another example that he used to say is that as long as reruns of Friends are still playing on television, well, then things must be okay. And that's,
well, as long as the television's still on,
yeah,
things must be okay.
Yeah.
And this is something I often thought about. If, you know, if they have a big blackout, right? If there's a big blackout and your TV's not on, how are they going to get the propaganda to you?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I find it hard to believe they'll cut everything off for any long period of time. Because if people are left to their own devices, then they might just take it out on the people who need to be taken out, shall we say.
Yeah, I don't see that happening until, you know, it really is time to off with our heads or something, you know, until we really are into the next, you know, pin, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening.
Until they don't need us to watch the television.
Right.
Yeah.
When that could be brain chips. Yeah.
Yeah, when they got the barbed wire up.
Yeah, but there'll be something. I mean, you saw what happened during the lockdowns is these different companies just came out. And, you know, this is government cooperation with this. It wasn't just the companies deciding we're going to flood you with pornography during the lockdown part of the pandemic. No. This was by design.
No, and they gave extra channels and everything for free and all that kind of thing because mm-hmm. people were stuck at home, apparently,
mm-hmm.
Instead of just getting out the house and doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
They haven't done it since, have they? Everybody's back to work. No, they've got to pay for it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So charity begins when tyranny ensues, apparently.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So I think that, look, we'll get this one out of the way. Socialism debunked in two sentences. All of the socialists could meet up, gather all of their wealth together, and then divide it equally amongst themselves. This will never happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
How about the Soros's of this world and the Gates and that? Just put all their money together and share it amongst all their hangers-on, because there's thousands of them. They'd soon be very poor, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we wouldn't get any, of course.
No.
We wouldn't want it from them. I get to talk about politicians. Another one of... All the quotes I've got from Solzhenitsyn are from the Gulag Archipelago. So.
Mm-hmm.
Unlimited power in the hands of limited people always leads to cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
That's your limited people being the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, the old proverb does not lie. Look for the brave in prison and the stupid among the political leaders. Well, I don't think the ones that lead us are the stupid ones. The people at the top know exactly what they're doing.
Yes.
They might be stupid to, in the eyes of the people above them. You know, people still look up to them. This is what I can't get my head around. It doesn't matter what they do.
You sent me a little video of that MP and Andrew Bridgen. Mm-hmm. He was being interviewed and he was talking about the fact that politicians are bribed or bribable, and that's just...
And afraid, he said.
Yes.
Well, what kind of government have you got? if they're afraid of, if they're afraid of speaking out. I mean, and people think that if the politicians aren't safe, you certainly aren't safe. You know, if part of their own club is afraid of them, then you should be terrified, because if they're willing to take them out, or, you know, get some scandal on them or whatever, and embarrass them in all the newspapers or whatever, imagine what they'll do to you. You know, nothing's too little for these people, or too low.
No. The interesting thing, you pointed out that the interviewer didn't say, well, what do you mean they're
and
all...
Who?
And who is doing the bribing? Yeah. It wasn't
pursued.
Or who's
compromised?
Yes.
Who's compromised? Yeah, because, I mean, if Andrew Bridgen was really doing his job, he'd be naming names.
Yes.
So, I mean, he's just been put out there to appease the public. And I see so many of the people in the so-called truth movement, and big names in the truth movements, latching onto this guy and giving him all this credit and stuff for coming out. He's not said anything that we didn't know already. So I don't know why people are bothering with him.
This is very orchestrated. I mean, and the name that's come up in a couple of different things that I've done lately is remembering Christopher Monckton.
Yeah.
Who was these people are just put out as kind of steam valves so that we can go, yeah, you tell them.
Yeah, that guy was Margaret Thatcher's advisor. Okay. It's like Bridget. I mean, I'm not going to do it, but I don't suppose anybody's looked back at his voting record over all the times he's been. I bet he voted for all this stuff that's clamping down on freedom of speech and all the rest of it.
Certainly,
you know,
yeah.
Prior to him supposedly waking up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like nobody'd ever heard of him before. Nobody.
Well,
except the constituents.
This bill in this Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, I think it's H.R. 6090, this passed unanimously.
Well, I mean, Biden said that it's now a crime to criticize Israel. Try and make it a crime to criticize Israel. Who does he think he is?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. So we can criticize any other country in the world, including America, but we can't criticize Israel.
With everything, because this is coming, you know, the bill that passed in Scotland last month. I haven't had time to check in and see how many complaints have been lodged,
yeah.
But with everything, the scary part of this is that it's, if we can't question everything, anybody, any country, and say, okay, that you tell us that this is the official account, but we have the right to question that and discuss it. If we can't do that about everything, including Israel, then we're not free at all.
No. If you can't question your government, then you've got tyrants.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. If you can't question them, then you don't have a government. You've got despots. You know, you don't... they are supposed to answer to us, remember?
Mm-hmm.
that's the myth, anyway. Yeah, if you can't question, as you say, you can't question anything they're doing, then there's a big, big problem.
Mm-hmm. And this has been the thing. This is why what you say, you know, where do people draw the line or take the stand? If, as you pointed out, people would have stood up against the LGBTQ, the most grotesque attacks on children, and they've willingly participated in this, and we have reached the point now where in some countries it is illegal. Canada is an example. It is illegal. There's a bill that was passed several years ago. You can't even say to your child in the privacy of your own home, you need to think about this a little bit harder before you get on these hormone blockers. Nope, that's a crime.
Yeah, because the child might commit suicide.
Exactly.
Really. Well, that's been, as we mentioned last time, that's been proven a total fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
They grew out of it. But, still pushed.
The free speech is that we should be able to have, if we were really free, we would be able to talk about these kind of issues all day long, even heatedly, and be allowed to do so.
Isn't that what a debate is?
Yes.
You know, a heated discussion over anything. The difference is that these politicians are taught how to debate and how to avoid debate by just mealy-mouthed rubbish that comes out of them to fob you off. It used to be quite clever, actually. It used to be quite clever when politicians actually seemed to have a brain. But the ones now just keep repeating one line over and over again. It's like I refer the honourable gentleman to the answer I gave previously or something like that. And they just keep repeating it. They just keep repeating it, repeating it, repeating it, and never answer the question that's actually asked. You know. Here's another one from one man who stopped lying could bring down a tyranny. There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go, Andrew
mm-hmm.
Bridgen.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Come out and name names.
Yep.
You know, if you really believe you've put your head above the parapet already, what have you got to lose? You know, go for it. Knock yourself out before they do.
Yeah.
As I say, people latch on to these politicians who they know they shouldn't trust, but all of a sudden something says something they like and everything's okay again.
Mm-hmm.
he's on the television. It must be true. If they weren't actually showing his speeches in Parliament, you might think, hold on a minute, well, maybe there's something to this. But they want you to see him there doing his little speeches and the public gallery applauding and the speaker in the house telling them to be quiet or to be arrested. You know, isn't the public gallery there just for that reason?
Mm-hmm.
They have every right to applaud somebody's speech. It doesn't, you know, if the both parties are in the house, as it were, one side of the bench and the other side of the bench, and especially in relation to wars or COVID or whatever it was, all sides of the house are clapping, applauding and cheering, going, rah, 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 mm-hmm. all this rubbish. But if you're the public gallery, you're not allowed to do that because you only pay their wages. that's all you're there for. You're there to pay their wages. and you're not even going, I don't think you're actually allowed in when they're voting on the pay rise.
We've got to examine what you just said a little bit more closely. Wages. Is usually compensation for a job that someone has done. So we need
usually
to,
well done.
Yeah, usually well done. So I don't think the politicians really get our, you know, we're not paying their wages. We're just
remuneration.
Yes.
Call it that, or a stipend. Yeah, they get a stipend, or a grant. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Well, they're getting a tax rebate, aren't they? Because it's our tax that's getting rebated to them, and they're certainly not worth the money.
No.
I mean, the UN definition of a good citizen is a good producer and consumer. What are these guys producing? Nothing.
Well, let's see, hot air.
Well, there are machines that will consume that, of course. So I guess a lot of hot air comes out of Parliament. So I guess they need those big machines that there's no product for that they can sell. You know, that stuff, that one you had, that discussion with Johnny about the machines that mm-hmm. produce nothing, but they created a market for it. Yeah, well, there is this where the hot air's coming from. I always wondered where that was going to come from.
Well, what they do produce, though, sadly, are things like Bill C-63 being proposed in Canada or H.R. 6090 in the U.S. or the hate crime bill that passed in Scotland, or what's going on in Ireland, which is possibly the most frightening one that I've looked at. You know, they produce.
Yeah, but I would have thought the definition of production and consumption was material goods. I wouldn't have thought it was anything intangible. It has to be something tangible you produce to balance out with your consumption, surely.
I guess there's a lot of paper that goes into these laws that suffocate us.
But they don't make the paper.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Then I say off with
we
their
make
heads.
The paper. We make
off
the paper.
With their heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go. Let's take this to the UN. Let's say all these guys do is consume.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, they consume a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are jetting all over the world sometimes for no good reason. You know,
they go to
conferences and spout more hot air. For no tangible product at the end of it. It's usually actually destructive when they come back. They actually destroy consumption.
I, You know, I think about this a lot, especially in big election years like this one is in the U.S. If people could just see politics as a big piece of entertainment. It's one of the biggest reality shows ever dreamed up, produced. You know, it's a not talk about a soap opera that's continuously running. It's not Coronation Street. It's Parliament. It's Congress.
It's Big Brother in business suits.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. You're just a voyeur watching these people on performance.
Yes, and somehow, I mean, it does impact your life, but it's a piece of fiction impacting your life. And if you could just say, this is the, this is a show that I don't need to watch. I don't want to participate in. I'm not going to vote for these jokers. And I'm going to tell people we don't have to do this.
Well, I say that all the time. I had this conversation before. Like, it's not my fault. The problem is, it's my fault. I didn't vote for them.
Yeah.
You know?
We may have talked about this, but have you seen that George Carlin bit on that?
Well, it's a big club, but you're not in it.
No, it's another one about voting. You know, because it's Carlin, of course, it's quite crude and a lot of profanity.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically says, you know, I don't vote. So don't tell me that, you know, I've made this problem. You're the jokers that voted.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's my philosophy on it. You know, and as I say, people come back at me and say, well, you know, it's complaining. I'm like, well, you know, whatever.
You know, he addresses that in this little bit. I'll have to, I may embed that into the talk. It's a profanity warning.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, in fact, did not even leave the house on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, they come back to you, you know, 3 or 4 years' time and they're complaining about the person they voted for.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, I told you.
Yes.
And they go, but you never voted. And they go down the same road, you never voted. So, but you wanted me to vote for the guy you voted for.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where's your logic there? Yeah.
Yes.
I guess we'll do the last soldier in it somewhere now. We might move on to Bill Cooper. That's the last one here. You can resolve to live your life with integrity. Let your credo be this. Let the lie come into the world. Let it even triumph, but not through me. In other words, don't perpetuate the lie.
Yes.
Like the LGBT rubbish. Yes. Like the climate change rubbish.
Yeah.
Deny it.
Yes.
All the time. And be proud to be a denier.
Yes. Don't be part of the problem.
Problem. Yeah. I mean, you can't be, the only part of the solution you can be at present, until they stop me talking, is just to not go along with any of it. Mm-hmm. And not push it, not promote it in any way, shape, or don't even make excuses for it.
Mm-mm.
Or give it any justification. It's like the euthanasia thing, the old trope that they roll out. Oh well, if somebody's in, you know, a really bad pain, well, yeah, that's just the way of the world, I'm afraid. And there are ways to deal with that,
mm-hmm.
if they really wanted to, like we discussed last time. Yeah, anybody can kill themselves anytime they want to, you know, if they thought a little bit about it.
I think I mentioned this last time, but the dog, the Canadian euthanasia dog?
No.
He's got a rope, you know, with a noose between his teeth.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned to you, we got a dog. Yeah, he's over in the corner here.
He's very sweet looking.
Yeah, if he starts snoring, I'll have to put him out because he's kind of loud. Anyway, that's he's sleeping at the moment. All right. So, Bill Cooper. I didn't get time to look through the books and find it, so I just went to the quote sites. Right?
I just want to say really quickly, because I think Solzhenitsyn, in case we have people who don't know who Alexander Solzhenitsyn is, he was a dissident during the Soviet era. He ended up coming to the United States, and I think he might have
been in Canada.
Yes, and he ended up living in, possibly in Connecticut for many, many years. Yes. He was a Christian, but he was imprisoned, and the Gulag Archipelago were a series of books that he wrote while he was imprisoned or about his imprisonment.
Yeah, and he was in the Red Army, and he was imprisoned basically for writing. He was an officer. He was writing letters back to somebody telling them how bad it was on the front and the mistakes that were getting made by the generals and stuff. And then he went back on leave or something. They arrested him, and he spent the best part of 10 years in these prison camps all over the place.
Hmm. Very sad, yeah. But he certainly wrote a lot of good warnings about the system of mm-hmm. communism, socialism, etc. And then Bill Cooper, because I know that there are people who won't know who this is, William Cooper was killed in 2001, November. And he was a Navy intelligence for a good part of his career, and one of the early speakers and writers in what we call the Patriot or Truth movement. Alan talked to him quite a few times. And in fact, this always scared me when Alan told me about it. I was like, oh, thank God. But he wanted Alan to come down and visit him. And they'd been kind of having a back and forth. And it didn't work out because of travel documentation, the timing to get it, and other things that Alan had going on. But he would have been there at the time that had the plans gone forward, he would have been there when Bill Cooper was killed. Now, the official story is that he owed taxes and he was belligerent to sheriffs or who showed up there at his property, but he was gunned down. He was literally cut in half with bullets.
Shot in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, shot in the back running towards his house.
Exactly. And the other thing to know about Bill Cooper is that he either had a prosthetic leg or I'm not sure he had a problem with one of his legs, whether it was a full prosthesis or just the fact that he really wasn't that mobile.
I think he had some kind of amputation.
I think so.
Not much,
but yeah. he put out a lot of good material about the system. For sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll start with the first one on that then. When the government is able to collect tax and seize private property without just compensation, it is an indication that the public is ripe for surrender and is consenting to enslavement and legal encroachment. A good and easily quantified indicator of harvest time is the number of public citizens who pay income tax despite an obvious lack of reciprocal or honest service from the government, which is just what we were saying before about the parliamentarians that get their stipends from us and produce nothing for it except mm-hmm. misery. He goes on, if the people really cared about their fellow man, they would control their appetites, greed, procreation, etc., so that they would not have to operate on a credit or welfare social system which steals from the worker to satisfy the bum. Since most of the general public will not exercise restraint, there are only two alternatives to reduce the economic inductance of the system. Let the populace bludgeon each other to death in war, which will only result in a total destruction of the living earth. Take control of the world by the use of economic silent weapons in a form of quiet warfare, and reduce the economic inductance of the world to a safe level by a process of benevolent slavery and genocide. The latter option has been taken as the obviously better option. At this point, it should be crystal clear to the reader why absolute secrecy about the silent weapons is necessary. The general public refuses to improve its own mentality and its faith in its fellow man. It's become a herd of proliferating barbarians and, so to speak, a blight upon the face of the earth. And I guess the levels of stupidity and depravity that the public now wallows in and idol worship of all these celebrities and stuff is exactly what he's talking about. They've just gone down the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
And in case anybody doesn't know about the Silent Weapons for Quiet War, I think Alan's, that link's on Alan's website, isn't it? Silent Weapons for Silent Wars.
It should be. He's mentioned it enough.
Yeah, and it's basically, I mean, Bill Cooper doesn't mention everything in this because some of this stuff wasn't around when he wrote the book back in 1991. But it's everything that's being done that's bad for you, including the spraying of the skies. I think he mentions that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some, the food, the water, the pharmaceutical industry, everything that's there in your environment is there to cause you harm. There's nothing in it to cause you any good or to make your health any better, put it that way. It's all there to either physically damage you or mentally damage you. And that's what Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars is for. And the public will never seem to get it. Like we mentioned last time with this eclipse, millions of people looking up the sky at the sun, and every other day of the week there's trails all over the sky and nobody sees a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They only see what they want to see and hear what they want to hear. And a little example of that, I was in my little local bar for an hour or so the other day there, and they were, there's two old folk there, I think they're old hippies from Pennsylvania, and they were talking about, it is getting hot here, it's 96 degrees or something today, it's going to be 98 on Thursday. We've not had any rain for a month, and our yard is like a large sandpit at the moment. They were told, the climate is definitely changing. I didn't say anything to that. And I was listening, and then this other guy, they're from Pennsylvania, and this other guy that lives here is from Pennsylvania as well. And he started talking about the coal mines are shutting down up there and all this kind of stuff. And he said, and where do all these people with these electric vehicles think their power's going to come from? And I said, diesel generators. And he turned to me, he says, yeah, you could be right. I says, I am right. That's exactly where they come from. And gas and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And I says, and do you know how many gallons of water it takes to produce 1 ton of lithium? And he said, I have no idea. I says, you know what the weight of these batteries is? It doesn't take maybe 2 or 3 cars for a ton of lithium, right? And he goes, yeah. I says, 450,000 gallons of fresh water. And I says, and you wonder why we're paying so much for water?
Mm. You know, in the real history that I did last week with Mark up in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada, we were talking about the corporatization, or, you know, maybe sports has always been this way, but the, you know, sports are really corporate entities. You're not cheering so much for your team, your home team, your town's team. And an example that he gave was the naming of the arena in Seattle, Washington is called Climate Pledge Arena. And he sent me the photo to use in the video. This is the official photo of Climate Pledge Arena. Has a big chemtrail over the arena.
Well, that's changing the climate, isn't it?
And then, so I thought, well, I'll use that one. And because we were talking about it a while, I went to look for another image. And the other image that I found and used was, you know, the mush that you get where there are obvious chemtrail clouds that are left. They're mm-hmm. not real clouds. So I use that one too, and I'm just like, this is beautiful, but of course people don't see it because the only time they look up is when they're told, oh, hey, it's a total eclipse, look up, the rest of the time.
You should have used that one from that lady who had the 9 new clouds, that big cylindrical one.
Yes.
That'd been good. People would have believed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Bill Cooper. Education. He talks about schools a little bit in this book. Well, quite a bit, actually. And I guess he's got four quotes here about education. The quality of education given to the lower class must be of the poorest sort, so that the moat of ignorance isolating the inferior class from the superior class is and remains incomprehensible to the inferior class. That goes back to what we're saying about politicians. People look up to them, and mm-hmm. there's no reason to do so whatsoever, just because they went to some kind of high-paid school, you know. With such an initial handicap, even bright lower class individuals have little hope, if any, of extricating themselves from their assigned lot in life. This form of slavery is essential to maintaining some measure of social order, peace and tranquility for the ruling upper class. In view of the law of natural selection, it was agreed that a nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. I think Alan used that one quite a lot.
Well, that one, in that one, he's taking, that's a little bit of Albert Pike that he paraphrased.
Yeah.
But the concept of it, too, is coming right out of Bertrand Russell. There's a passage in either the Scientific Society or the Scientific Outlook or Science and Society, one of the books that he wrote there, where he talks about the all of the different things, education primarily, but also diet and, you know, other things, which will create two separate classes of people. The ruling
like
of, yes, two different species. And he says that they will be like two different species. And we are there, no doubt.
Well, once they get down the road of full transhumanism, then, of course, was it Russell that said they would remain the wild men?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they'll be the...
No, actually, that was Galton Darwin, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so, well, I think Russell might have repeated it in one of his books, I'm not sure. But yeah, there's your two different species. They've got the human beings and the people that are hooked up to the internet.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Who have no free will of their own at all.
Yeah.
Because their heads will be controlled. This one on schools, keep the young public ignorant of real mathematics, real economics, real law, and real history. That's about it, isn't it?
Yes.
Don't teach them anything. Mathematics, a lot of things in mathematics that are natural things in the world. The people understood them, they'd go, oh, wait a minute, that's not what we've been told. That's not how the world really works. Or that's not what we've been told how the world works. Look at snowflakes, look at leaves, look at all those kind of things that use mathematics without being conscious beings, if you like. They're all perfect, symmetrical, all this kind of thing going on, crystals and all that kind of thing. That's real mathematics. Real economics, of course, is the money system, the fraud that we're taught, the false economies that we're taught. Real law, well, there's only one law, isn't there? Do no harm, that's it. But we never seem to use that anymore because the politicians are the ones doing all the real harm. And real history, of course, which includes everything else. Well, includes everything. Because if we knew real history, we wouldn't have to worry about real mathematics, real economics, or real law, would we? Because we'd know it. We'd already know it if we were taught real history.
That's right.
The last one on schools is, as the transition becomes more difficult to manage, the family unit must be carefully disintegrated and state-controlled public education and state-operated childcare centres must become more common and legally enforced so as to begin the detachment of the child from the mother and father at an earlier age. And we're there.
Yes.
We've been there for a long time. And it's become even worse because of the stuff they're teaching them now, even at the childcare centres, even at the kindergartners from 4 years old.
So, I mean, recruiting in Scotland, recruiting four-year-old children to be part of the LGBT club.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. The teacher should be clubbed.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, these teachers are only in their 20s, a lot of them. Straight out of college. They know nothing about life. And they're going in there with bright blue hair and all this kind of stuff. And the men are going in there all effeminate and pretending they're women or whatever they pretend to be. And encouraging people to pretend they're animals.
You know,
it's a comedy sketch.
It is. And it's also tragic and disgusting. I stumbled onto a story last week, which was so disgusting. And it was about a 25-year-old female teacher who was arrested and charged with at least one count of sexual abuse. She was having some kind of sexual relationship with an 11-year-old boy student.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, sexting and making out and all of this. And it's just shocking and awful. I mean, this is what what has been raised up in society is a pedophile who is put in charge of the welfare of your child, doesn't have any kind of moral compass whatsoever, that this is okay. I mean, it's just shocking. And yeah. When I thought, oh, I might bring that one up with you. And so I looked, I didn't find the first story I had seen last week. I found a different story in the paper. And this one just made me sad. The family of the boy had invited this teacher on a ski trip with them.
I saw that might be the one I saw.
Yes, and they thought at the time they were just inviting a beloved teacher along on a family vacation. But, you know, I just thought, where is it in society that even that would be okay? You know, the parents should be the one on the vacation and bonding and all of the strong relating that happens to children, certainly under the age of puberty, that should be coming from the family setting. So what we've allowed to happen in our society is just, it's truly tragic.
Well, it goes back to the misogynistic quote, where do you draw the line? Mm-hmm. You know, we're way past drawing the line, yeah, as far as I can see. And I don't know how they go backwards from there. I think it's possibly going to take a bunch of like-minded fathers or something to go into a school and throw every one of these teachers out in the street and tell them not to come back under threat of violence, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are a danger to their children.
In this story, that is what happened. The mother overheard a conversation between her son and the teacher, and the father stormed the school, and that woman was, you know, dealt with immediately. But it would take, you know, it's where is the line? Because if you are going along with teachers who are indoctrinating your four-year-old into, you know, being part of an LGBT promotion club, then...
Or like the one we mentioned last time with the teacher got them all to pose naked so the
yes,
boys could simulate masturbation.
Yes.
Well, the mothers should have been at that school and dragged her out by the
absolutely
hair.
Absolutely.
And thrown her in the street and probably give her a few kicks while she was down there.
And what's shocking about a story like that is that she wasn't arrested and imprisoned.
Yeah.
She was just stripped of her teaching credentials, but, you know...
Yeah, well, this one, the one you mentioned there, she was busted for making out with a fifth grader. She was engaged to be married.
I know.
I mean, what kind of sick pervert is this?
I know. One of the articles said that a friend, you know, her fiancé was too upset and embarrassed to say anything, and the friend was speaking on his behalf, and he said, well, obviously the wedding is off. Mm-hmm. It's bad enough when your fiancé cheats on you, but to cheat on you with a child, you just can't get past that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. So, most of the articles about the wedding, the friend said the decision to kill the wedding, which was scheduled for July 27th, was a mutual decision, not one of the others alone. I think the guy would just say, get the heck out of my life. You know, I hope you go to jail. I don't think it would have been, she had any input into that at all.
Mm.
And if she does, he must be a really nice guy, right? To allow her to even have any say in it.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't even want to look at her again.
No, no.
You know?
I mean, how could you... This would be a potential mother of your children. No. There have to be really harsh consequences. I mean, you know, one thing, I don't know if Alan ever said this publicly on a show or not, but I think he might have hinted around at it. But what he said, people would say, well, what's going to turn this around? What's going to turn, how do we turn? And basically, his idea of what it would take to turn it around would be a cataclysm. Mm-hmm. That the elite did not plan or execute, that was outside of their control, that wiped out most people and what came out of the rubble rebuilt something with some semblance of morality. And that's pretty extreme. But when we look around at the complacency, the willingness of most people to go along with just degradation.
Yeah, you're almost talking about the flood.
Right? Yes.
That's the analogy, isn't it? The flood.
Yes.
Take that two of every animal onto the ship and let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let them at it. If they want to dance naked around the Tower of Babel, let them at it.
Yeah.
Or the false bull or whatever it was. Yeah. at this stage, as you say, when you look around, is there any other way, really?
Oh, it's...
than something that they hadn't planned, because everything they've planned is bad. And if you... And we've gone along with it too long. No, the vast majority of people have gone along with it without saying a thing and actually, as you say, taken part in it and encouraged it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no hope for them. There's no hope for those type of people. But yeah, everything going to ash and whatever comes out, not a phoenix, but whatever comes out of that.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of his thought is kind of echoing Bezmenov. What we have is cultural contamination that runs so deep, and it has contaminated people in such a profound way that they cannot even comprehend their own.
It's generational now.
Yes.
It's generational contamination, because, as I say, the parents are taking their children to pride things and take them to libraries to get read to by a pervert.
Yes.
So there's two generations there that are affected. One of them is grooming their own children for perverts, and there's no hope for them either. The children have got more chance to get there than the parents have.
I may have mentioned this before, but Alan had a listener, a Canadian woman that lived in the States, and she was in her 60s, and her mother was in her 80s, and she had a stepfather also in his late 80s. And this woman had a nephew who was transitioning. And when the listener to Alan made a comment about it that wasn't completely on board and supportive, her mother in her 80s said, "Oh, you're just terrible. You know, that, how backward for you to respond in this way." So her own parents, the television watching octogenarians, thought that this was a wonderful thing, that their grandson should try to become a woman, as if.
Well, they'd obviously seen that on television.
And, yes.
Listen to all the propaganda around
exactly.
it and how nasty it was to criticize it.
Exactly. So, I mean, you're talking deep, deep contamination. Alan was right. Yeah. It would take a cataclysm.
Well, it shows you the power of the television, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When 80-year-olds who you'd think would know better, who you would hope would know better, who would be a bit wiser than the next couple of generations down from them, who've seen a bit more of life, you wouldn't think that that kind of thing would be tolerated in their own minds, never mind in reality.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently is. Apparently is. But the last one with Bill Cooper was just what we're talking about, I guess, a generational thing. A woman with a newborn baby is too starry-eyed to see a wealthy man's cannon fodder or a cheap source of slave labour. So right from the start, and we mentioned this before, right from the start, the first thing the mother does is she wants to get that kid vaccinated, the child vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not in the best interest of the child, but it's in the best interest of them who want to control the child later on, or make money out of them, or do whatever they want to them. I mean, who knows what these shots are going to do to children in the future? Who knows? Is it going to make them totally androgynous? Who knows?
Right.
Are we going to suddenly see a generation of children not developing genitals at all?
I mean, this is possible. This is possible.
Yeah. I mean, they can do chemical castrations, can't they? I don't see any difference. Maybe they'll have genitals, but they won't work.
Yeah.
So you won't notice the difference. You won't notice there's anything wrong until the child comes to an age where, you know, puberty or whatever, and nothing happens. They're just totally disinterested in any kind of attraction to the opposite sex because they don't have any sexual hormones in the body. They don't have any
testosterone?
Instinct.
Instinct. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes,
you're right. You're right. Because the testosterone and estrogen are the chemical drivers of the instinct, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The survival instinct. Yeah. And it is about survival. It's not about, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily like, oh, I want to have a baby. It's about, you know, the survival of the species, mm-hmm. like every other creature. Deep down, that's what it is.
Yes.
So, I don't know, maybe that's where we're going with that. But, I guess this last one from Bill Cooper is kind of, I mean, you could actually laugh at it, because it's true. The people hire the politicians so that the people can, one, obtain security without managing it, two, obtain action without thinking about it, three, inflict theft, injury, and death upon others without having to contemplate either life or death. Four, avoid responsibility for their own intentions. And I'll add in their actions as well. Five, obtain the benefits of reality and science without exerting themselves in the discipline of facing or learning either of these things. Just think about the injections.
Yeah.
They wanted to obtain the benefits of safe and effective, but they didn't bother looking at them. To mm-hmm. see if they were safe and effective, and now they're suffering the consequences.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
This is very tragic too, because you know it's starting to leak out just a little bit in very subtle and managed ways into the mainstream. Little articles here and there about injuries, and because I think it said. Well, for whatever reason, they want people to think about that now. Or
yeah. Well, there was a clip I saw of Jeremy Vine, of all people, one of the most disgusting TV presenters on television, in all around this COVID garbage, and he's so patronizing to anybody that calls in and tries to ridicule them and all this kind of thing. And now he put out a little clip there about Hancock trying to lay all the blame on him for scaring the public, for the behavioural change unit and all this kind of thing. But nothing about the jabs. Nothing. Only about Matt Hancock, who I'd said before, they'll throw him under the bus as quick as I can because he's a liability. Mm-hmm. He's going to take the flak for the behavioural insights team and the behavioural change units when it's got nothing to do with him, really. It's way, way, way above him. He's just a guy that's put up front to take the flag for it. It's what's the department? It's a specialised government department that deals with all that stuff, and he wasn't part of that.
This is the time. See, these are the kind of meaningless gestures that come out of the inquiries that our tax dollars pay for.
Mm-hmm.
They achieve nothing.
Well, they're just meant to appease the public.
Mm-hmm.
We think something's going to come out of it. And then by the time these inquiries get finished, usually years down the line, everybody's forgotten about it. Mm-hmm. And they're going, oh, somebody got fined for this, that, and the next thing. Well, what was that about again? Can't mm-hmm. remember. Or you're not even paying attention to it. It'll be on page 16 of the newspaper, you know, in small print at the bottom next to an ad for condoms or something.
Well, listen, Neil, your son is coming in soon, right?
Yep, we're on the 22nd.
22nd, okay.
Yep.
And he'll be here a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Are you ready for his trip?
Well, I've saved up as much as I can. That's all I can do. But more or less. I had to do quite a bit of stuff just to clear up around the house and all that kind of thing.
Well, he and his family are going to get the benefit of all those good eggs and your home-cured bacon, right?
Yep, yes, you are. Well, there'll be some of that in the Airbnb when they come. So, we're going over. I'm going to pick them up at the airport. Paula's going to go over to the Airbnb and stock it up with food and stuff. So,
great. Well, you sent me a picture of your first tomatoes from the garden.
Yep, yeah. Well, there's quite a few coming this year. Surprisingly.
That's good.
I mean, considering the drought we've had, and there is a drought, so it's been terrible. We've had the hoses on, and there's a hose pipe ban, apparently, or something to that effect.
Mm.
You're only allowed to use water at certain times of the day, so I have my irrigation put on in the darkness of the night, so nobody can see it.
Well, we're having the opposite weather. It just has been raining all the time for quite a few weeks, but I'm not complaining because...
Oh, send some here.
Yeah.
As I say, it's going to be 98 degrees on Thursday in the shade. I'm going fishing tomorrow. It's going to be 96.
Go early.
I do go early. And I come back late.
Gone fishing. Well, yeah, thank you so much for doing this with me. And when we talk next month, your son and his family will have come and gone.
Yeah, they will. And I'll be a lot poorer for it.
Well, it's money well spent.
Oh, it's money well spent, yeah. I'm sure they'll, those children will find a way to spend it.
That's great. How old are your grandchildren?
Well, the oldest one's 21. The next one's going to be 15 when she's here, so we're having a party for her when she's here.
Oh, great. Fun.
And because she's 15 when she's here, she can go down the range and fire guns without having an instructor. So we're going to go and do that. I think that's her birthday's on the 29th, I think, of May. So okay. They'll still be here a few days, so we're going to go to the range and she can shoot a machine gun or something and tell all her friends.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. The little lads will be a bit disappointed because he's too young. And when I was over there, they had a water pistol and he was waving it all over the place. I says, hey, you can't be pointing guns at people without getting them wet, right? If you're going to use that, you've got to get them wet. I says, you won't be able to go to the range because you're just too young. And too
how old is he?
Nine,
okay.
But he's hyper. I don't want to go into that, but he's a target, shall we say, of these teachers. He's, oh, this guy just won't set up.
He's just a boy.
He's just exactly like I was, just like his dad is.
He's a boy, yes. Yeah. You know, this is a terrible thing they've done to little boys because they have a lot of energy. They're very different than girls, thank God.
Well, we used to do it. This is at primary school. We had a big grass area for soccer pitches and stuff, and we had a big concrete area where the basketball courts and netball courts were. And because we were boys, we used to run around. We used every lunchtime, we'd do about 20 or 30 laps of that and have race against each other because we had so much energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for an hour, that was our lunch hour, just ran around this basketball court continually. You know? Yeah. And but now they're not even allowed to shout loud in the playground.
You'd be labelled ADHD instantly.
Well, where my family lived, there used to be a swimming pool there, like a public swimming pool. They shut it all down. My granddaughter was in the swimming competitions there and all that stuff. She couldn't do that anymore. They're taking all the physical exercise things away from the children and wondering why they've got so much energy left. It's absolutely nonsense. We would be thrown out of the house when I was younger. Like, get outside and play, that's it. And don't come back till it's dinner time. Nobody worried about you. You know, nobody had to worry about you. Because everybody knew everybody. The doors were open in your neighbour's house. You could walk into somebody's house. If they had, you know, if you were playing with their kids, you could just walk in and say, is little Johnny coming out to play? Yeah, fine, he'll be out in a minute when I kick him out. You know, he's going to get his shoes on, I'm kicking him out. He's come back 6 hours later. And nobody worried. But anyway, that's it. I think I was going to, we'll probably talk about this the next time, but the Bill Cooper, Behold the Pale Horse, for anybody who's wondering what that book was, in the section of Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, he's got a section on the draft and how guilt is used on different sectors, on different people in different ways to put pressure on the young men to go to war. So I think we'll be seeing that again, don't you?
I do. Well, I just read that France is sending troops into Ukraine. So
I think they're already there.
They probably are already there. Yeah, so,
I think the British ones are there as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I see this happening.
It's the conscription thing that's the big deal. And I just cannot see any way that young people today would go along with that unless it's forced upon them. I just can't see it. I mean, there's only so much social stigma will make people do things, but young people today have no kind of conviction about any of that kind of stuff. They can't be guilt-tripped into that, I don't think.
No, I think if it wasn't conscription, it would have to be some kind of package, you know, like a education monetary package.
You can be a one-legged basketball player when you get out of the military.
Neil.
Yeah. Well, that's the reality, isn't it? You can get a basketball scholarship when you come out, and they come out, you've got no legs. I used to be 6'7", now I'm 3'4".
All right. Well, we're going to be talking again in June, and I thank you for doing this with me. It's always fun.
Not a problem. Okay, we'll talk then. Around about the second Thursday is going to be, what, the 13th, so I'll be that week.
Okay. That no sounds problem. Good. All right. And everybody listening, I'm not sure who's coming on next week. I should know it. I have it written down somewhere, but I don't have it in my head. So you all take care, and I'll be back with someone next week. Thank you.
I've got something that the world didn't